Chapter 6, Alzok 3, Part 1. Five standard months after Din's near-death experience, he received a holo from one of his few non-guild contacts, Ranzak Malk, about a high-paying job. He set a course for the roost and got to work cleaning his blasters. If this was going to be anything like the other jobs he'd run with Ron, he'd need all of his equipment fully functional. When he arrived, the space station was unusually busy. There were already two other ships in the hangar, a tricked-out shuttle that belonged to the twins and an unfamiliar single-pilot starfighter that looked like it might fall apart any second. "Mando!" Ron shouted from across the hangar, once Din had disembarked the Razor Crest. He jogged over to Din, a jolly grin on his round face. He was grayer than Din remembered, though he supposed it had been a few years since they'd worked with each other directly. Ron clasped Din's gloved hand in both of his larger ones and shook it firmly. "It's good to see you again." "And you. Guild keeping you busy?" "Never busy enough." Ron chuckled. "Well, then I hope we'll be able to entertain ya." They walked to the back end of the docking bay, where there was an old holotable nearly obscured by dozens of crates, containing, undoubtedly, a vast quantity of explosives and weaponry. Ron flicked on the projection of Alzok 3, then zoomed in on an old Imperial mining facility high in the mountains. It was a wreck. The structure had been split right down the middle, and the eastern wing was partially caved in.
"It looks abandoned," Din commented.
"It ain't. The place is swarming with imps. Who knows what they're still up to out there? Not my problem. But rumor has it they've got some incredibly valuable livestock that they're holding deep within the facility."
"Livestock?" Ron nodded.
"Baby Shio bird, straight from Kashyyyk. I don't know what they want with it. Sell it, experiment on it, cook it, and eat it. But the damn thing's so rare, just one feather could buy a whole ass ship. And we're gonna be the ones that get the profits."
It seemed like a straightforward job, and Din almost never passed up the chance to kill off a few more stormtroopers. "When do we leave?"
"That's the spirit. I'll walk you through the details once you see the rest of the crew. Xian's been just dying to get her hands on you."
Ron hadn't been wrong. As soon as the purple-skinned Twi'lek spotted Din, she'd squealed with glee, flung her arms around his neck, and planted a kiss on his helmet. Din rested a hand on her side, neither pulling away nor encouraging the attention. He knew her flirting was meant to unsettle him, even if she did genuinely like him. It was just how mercenaries communicated. They prodded and poked at each other, a constant game to see who'd break first. Who had the thickest skin? Din often found that the best way to win was simply not to play.
"Hello, Xian. How are you?"
"How are you?" she giggled, mimicking Din's voice. "Always polite, so cute. Isn't he just the cutest, Quinn?"
She twisted Din's arms around to look at her twin brother behind her.
"Adorable," Quinn agreed, with a smile that was really more of a snarl.
"Well, you know the twins already, and here's Gleck." Ron introduced a bulky Trandoshian, who blinked at him in greeting.
"Is that all?"
Din asked. It was a small crew for a job like this, but he'd known Ron and the twins long enough that he had no doubts about their ability to take on even a whole base full of imps.
"We've got one more. Ah, there he is. This is my new friend, Jaro T'Pol. He helped me out of a few spots. Real good with stealth ops, and his droid can get through any security system in the galaxy."
Ron continued to say things that may have been important, but Din was completely distracted by the fact that none other than Poncho had appeared at Ron's side. He smiled at Din and offered him a small wave, which Din found himself reaching around Xian, who was still wrapped around his neck like an unusually affectionate vine snake, to mirror automatically. The man's poncho was navy and dark brown today. Perhaps sensing that something was going on that he didn't know about, Ron cleared his throat.
"You know each other?" You two know each other? No, Din denied firmly before Poncho. To Paul, he supposed? Though Din doubted that was his real name. Could say otherwise. He had no interest in explaining the circumstances of their last four meetings. Well then, Ron clapped his hands together and beamed at them all. Let's get to it, shall we? It was a short ride to Alzok 3, and Din spent most of it sequestered in the cockpit, having made something up about the autopilot misbehaving so he had an excuse to leave the rest of the crew in the Razor Crest's hold. He fiddled unnecessarily with the internal systems, just to have something to do with his hands. He didn't know what to make of any of it, unless Poncho had lied about his initials on the note he'd left in, which he had no reason to do, really. He was under an assumed name. That wasn't unusual in this line of work, but it did beg the question of why he'd choose to give Din his real initials when giving someone's name to a bounty hunter was just as dangerous as giving it to a crew of mercenaries. Unless, hypothetically, one planned on double-crossing the aforementioned mercenaries in the near future. Or maybe Din was overthinking all of it. There was something strangely compelling about Poncho, to Paul, whatever, beyond the fact that he seemed to be everywhere and Din wasn't used to paying any mind to people who weren't an immediate hazard to his health, or didn't seem to be anyway. His musings were interrupted by Xian's entrance into the cockpit. He gave no sign that he'd heard her and resisted the urge to kick her out when she slid into the co-pilot's chair and put her feet up on the control panel. One of her knives spun in her hand, deadly sharp. I'm bored, Mondo. Are we there yet? Din glanced at the navicomputer readouts. 12 minutes, 53 seconds. She threw her knife in the air and caught it neatly between two slender fingers. What do you think of T'Pol? He's almost as weird as you are.
How so?
I don't know, just funny vibes. He's down there playing with that droid like it's a pet Tuca.
I'm sure he'll do his job. We all just want the payout.
Xian sighed and put her feet down, and before Din could figure out a graceful way out of the situation, she'd moved to perch in his lap, her side pressed against his breastplate and her legs between his. You know what I want? She whispered, her lips close enough for her breath to fog up the bottom of his T-visor. It took all of Din's willpower not to lean away, not to show vulnerability. Maybe he could have wanted this once, but... I... Trip! Beep boop! Din stood automatically at the sound, pushing Xian off, and the Twi'lek slunk away from him. Poncho's droid was standing in the doorway, rectangular head tilted inquisitively. Xian giggled. Last time I saw a droid enter this cockpit, it got vaporized instantly. The droid recoiled slightly, and Xian's giggling intensified. Maybe he was just grateful for the timely intrusion, but Din found himself feeling vaguely guilty.
Do you need something?
The droid scuttled forward tentatively, and then released a lightning-fast series of beeps and chirps.
Well, I don't know what that means.
He fought down his more territorial impulses when the droid, ignorant of his internal dilemma, clambered up onto the dashboard and began perusing the different panels. After a few moments of furious investigation, scanning and chirping quietly, it hopped an impressive distance down from the power allocation levers into the co-pilot's chair and folded itself up, content. Had it just been curious about his ship? Pre-Imperial ships were rare, and the Razor Crest was unique beyond its age. If that was the case, he didn't blame the thing. Din thought his ship was pretty interesting, too. Din heard a huff and looked up to see Xian's face twisted into a scowl. What's so special about it? I'm not even allowed to touch anything up here.
Please go down and tell everyone we'll be landing soon.
In the middle of the night, Alzok 3 appeared even more icy and inhospitable than it had on the holoprojector. Din snuck the Razor Crest in close, hugging the mountain bluffs to decrease the chances of detection, then landed on the far side of the building's collapsed half. At this high altitude, the air was thin,
Din was grateful for his thick cape and the thermal systems in his armor that kept his face and body from going numb. But before long, the joints in his fingers and less armored legs began to ache. There was a reason he'd only ever spent time on warmer planets. The crew picked their way in silence through the darkened ruins. Din's night vision revealed the frozen bodies of stormtroopers, still in their dirty armor, pinned under fallen debris. Little rodent-like creatures fled under broken holotables and consoles at the sound of their footsteps. There was a sickening crunch of bone, and Din turned to see Gleck holding a fallen trooper's helmet, the skull that had been inside it crushed under his large, leathery foot. He tossed the helmet away with a clatter, and Shion hissed at him to be quiet. Finally, they came to the opposite side of the building, which ended abruptly in a sheer cliff face that seemed to extend downward for miles. Din could see the lights of the still-functioning part of the facility on the other side. Spanning the gap, there were only the sparse remains of bent durasteel floor beams and torn walls that would have once reached across the chasm. Nothing even remotely close to a bridge remained now. "There's a plasma bridge that extends to the back entrance. Just gotta activate it from the other side," Ron explained when Din and the others stared blankly at him for direction. "How the corking hell are we meant to do that?" Quinn asked incredulously. "We aren't doing anything." Ron looked to Poncho. "Go on, then." Din failed to suppress the flinch of alarm that tore through him, as, without further discussion, the man took a few steps back and then leapt off the cliff. But rather than falling to his death, as Din had been certain he would, the wind seemed to push him further, as though the man weighed nothing at all. He landed in a crouch for a split second on one of the remaining beams before springing off again, towards the next with a graceful flip, and then the next. When he came to one of the walls, he ran along it just as gracefully as he would have if it were the floor. He must have magnetic shoes or something. Yeah, that had to be it. Din couldn't see what was happening, Poncho having vanished into the night. But after a moment, a pale, semi-transparent plasma bridge hummed to life. "Told you he'd come in handy," Ron chuckled, leading the way across the bridge. Din didn't mind heights normally, but he still resisted the temptation to look down at his feet and the abyss below. "Thanks, Poncho," Din said lowly once they were on the other side, eliciting an aborted laugh from the other man. "Poncho? You heard me." He pointedly did not glance back as he passed, knowing he'd see that warm smile again and unaccountably reluctant to be its recipient. "Aren't you just a little monkey lizard?" Shion added snarkily, jostling Poncho's shoulder roughly as she followed Din through the blast doors and into the building.